In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Sometimes, Republicans are no better than Democrats when it comes to propaganda. Like the resurrection of HB 2002, it takes some real spin and requires convincing people not to believe the evidence of their own common sense. They want us to believe killing that horrid bill would have been a defeat, but ending the walkout and allowing it to come back to life is somehow a victory. We have to face the brutal facts that the Republican Party is not up to the task, not in its current condition. But the one real and true change for good that we have right now is to get school choice on the ballot, letting parents decide what school is best for their child. Woke teachers can't indoctrinate kids who aren't there. And if woke parents want their kids in woke schools, have at it. But parents should have the right to say, not my kids. Conservative parents should not be forced to put their kids in woke schools any more than woke parents should be forced to send their kids to a fundamentalist Christian school. The point is that each family can make the choice best suited for their child and their family and their values, and they absolutely should be allowed to make that choice. To talk about getting school choice on the ballot, I'd like to welcome Donna Kreisberg back to the show. She is a former business and tax attorney, CPA, and real estate broker, now retired from those. She is leading the effort to improve all schools in Oregon by putting real school choice on the 2024 ballot. Donna, it is great to talk to you again.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be back.
You know, it's been a month and a half since we last talked to you. How are things going overall in the fight to get school choice on the ballot?
Very well. We've got the summer events coming now. We've got a website that has links to the events. We have a special calendar that we've linked all of the events across Oregon. We have volunteers taking ownership of those events saying, hey, I'll handle the county fair and I'll handle this. We've got our school bus that's about to debut in the St. Paul Rodeo Parade,
cool,
where we'll have that on display and so lots of fun things. We're getting new volunteers to help us. We're giving them the education and the training on collecting signatures. We're giving them information about the measures so that they're comfortable answering questions when someone asks, hey, I'll sign the thing, but I need to know more about it. So it's very good.
Good, good. Well, we'll zero in more on some of the activities you've got going out there and also the volunteer opportunities in a later segment. But, you know, it just so happened that earlier this week I was on a Q&A with a research fellow from the Heritage Foundation Center for Education Policy. And one of the things that they talked about was the different cases or arguments for school choice, the liberal, the libertarian, and the conservatives. And according to the speaker, we most often hear the liberal or the libertarian cases, and we rarely hear the conservative cases. But I'd like to share these with our audience because I thought the discussion was really interesting and insightful. And I'd also like to get your insights to see how well their findings match with what you're seeing here in Oregon. And let's start with the liberal case. And when I say liberal, it's somewhat more of the traditional liberal, but it also includes some of the left-leaning sides of liberalism. And the liberals make the case that the American dream is predicated on opportunity, and that depends on access to a high-quality education system. The liberal case is about equity and equality of opportunity and helping the least advantaged in society. And from your experience, the liberal case for school choice that it will help the poor or disadvantaged or people of color, how persuasive have those kinds of arguments in support of school choice been to people here in Oregon?
I think they're very persuasive. The focus that we have is that we are trying to help all Oregon students, all Oregon kids. We aren't trying to single out any particular group. We're not trying to discriminate against. We're trying to make sure that all of our children get the opportunity for a great education because we have a very diverse set of children. They have different talents, different limitations, different learning styles. So we want to make education in Oregon as diverse as the children that we have in Oregon that are eager to learn. All kids have great potential. There could be situations where children are in an environment that is not right for them, and maybe they're super bright and they're not being challenged, or they need more help and they're not able to get that help. So our goal here is always about what do the children need and how do we make sure that they are able to learn in an environment that meets those needs.
Right.
So diversity of choice, diversity of opportunities, all of that's very important because our children are so diverse. They have uniqueness, they have strengths and weaknesses and limitations, and we want to make sure that we are responsive to all those. So we're not trying to change any school system. Instead, we're trying to make sure those school systems and environments stay the way they are, and then parents are able to choose among those.
Right.
So parents can choose public school setting, private school setting, charter school, homeschool, whichever setting meets the needs of their child. And there's many families for which they'll have children in all those different areas because within a family, the children themselves are different and learn differently. Hmm. So the whole point here is that it makes sense that there's a libertarian argument and a liberal and a conservative and whatever, because parents have different views and
yes.
children have different needs.
Right.
So we need to make sure that we can match the parent's choice with available opportunities.
Right. And in all three of those cases, they pointed out, do have means to persuade people, you know, based on that target audience. Although it's surprising to me that with as many progressives as we have here in Oregon, I really would have thought this liberal case would have been probably the most persuasive. But it turns out from what their research has shown, the liberal case, when you're talking about equity and disadvantaged people or appealing to people of color, helping the least advantaged, and it really has not been persuasive across the board. And the example that they gave was that for school choice proponents, they had tried this in very blue Massachusetts. That was their messaging, was that the school choice measure is going to help the disadvantaged and so forth. But it failed. Because the opposition's argument was, yes, this might help kids over there in those groups, but this is going to hurt your kids. And the opposition was also using the argument that school choice hurts the public school system and that parents were being asked to sacrifice the well-being of their own children and the quality of education they receive so you can maybe help some kids over there. Do you have any thoughts or reaction to that real quick? We've got about a minute.
Sure, it makes sense because I think what we don't want to do is say, hey, we're choosing the winners and losers. All parents love their children. All parents know how important education is for their children, and we all want our children to succeed. So I think the better message is, let's make sure we have school choice programs that enable all kids, no matter what income, where they live, what their political persuasion of their parents is. None of that matters. What's important is that these kids, all of them, get the opportunity to learn in the environment that works for them.
Right.
So I could see why saying, hey, only this group gets to benefit. No, why would you single out one against another? Let's make sure that it goes for all the kids.
Right, yeah, and we'll talk about that in the next segment too. Like I said, I really thought that would have been the winning argument here in Oregon, but that's really the whole point of marketing is you're testing messages to see what resonates, and a lot of times you're discovering what doesn't work more often than what does. All right, coming back, we're going to talk about the libertarian case and also the third case, the conservative case, and why it's by far the most persuasive. Stay with us. More with Donna Kreitzberg. There is an effort right now to get real school choice on the 2024 ballot. There are two initiatives underway. One covers the money aspect and allows some, not all of the funding, to follow the child to their school of choice, and the other covers the choice side of things, giving parents the ability to choose whichever school they want. And we are talking with Donna Kreitzberg, who is spearheading that effort. You can find out more by heading to educationfreedomfororegon.com. That's F-O-R, educationfreedomfororegon.com. And as always, we put our guest websites on our show pages, which you can find at ispyradio.com. Just look for today's show, which is 13-25. And so, Donna, we are talking about some of the cases being made for school choice, and we talked about the liberal case. The next one was the libertarian case, and this is really the case that Milton Friedman made. Way back in 1955, he proposed a school choice voucher because not every family can afford to give kids a good education, but libertarians would argue an educated population is one in which there are higher opportunities and lower crime. But it doesn't necessarily follow that government should run schools because they are not efficient, so the money should follow the student instead. Libertarians also make the case that school choice is about freedom. It's about choice and competition and markets, which will necessarily lead to improvements in efficiency and outcome for lowering costs. While I absolutely agree with all of those points and know that they're all true, given that Oregon is marching toward things like zero competition in its own healthcare system, I have a feeling those kinds of arguments probably don't necessarily resonate with the average Oregonian, or do they?
Well, I think what resonates here in Oregon is to focus on parents' love of their children and the desire for all parents to make sure that their children can get the best learning in whichever environment that is. So, yes, the concepts of competition and you know, free market and all those things are very important. But I think when you get down to the substance of it, what we want to make sure is that all parents are able to choose, and all of the money that we all pay in taxes that's meant for all of the children actually gets spent to educate all the children. Mm-hmm. Because we want to make sure, and our two measures are going to make sure that the taxes that we all pay for education focus on making sure that we have the student success front and center. The money should be funding the students and ensuring that they get the best education instead of the way it is right now, which is more make sure the funding follows a building or an administration or a particular philosophy.
Right.
So I think when you ask parents, hey, you know, what do you want your money to be spent on? Parents and grandparents and folks that don't even have children in the school system right now say, look, the public good here is making sure all of our kids get a great education, one, to help them in their life, but also to help Oregon and make use of that money and make sure that it's making all of our children as bright and educated and the best people that they can be, because they're going to become our doctors and our welders and our bus drivers and all those things. So it's the public good that we need to focus on, which is ensuring the money is spent on the children.
Right.
So I think if we focus on those concepts instead of maybe, you know, competition and everything else, because we all want the money to be spent well, because we all sort of flinch when we have to pay more taxes, and having school choice shouldn't raise taxes because it makes better use of all the money that we currently have
by following
the students to that environment.
Right. And I think if parents knew that the education taxes that they were paying were in fact going for a really good, high quality school, they'd be okay with that. And, you know, to hear you talk about the arguments that do work here in Oregon, you're actually making the conservative case, whether you knew it or not, because conservatives argue that education is not only preserving your own traditions, but it's a tradition of liberty where we are passing down to the next generation. And the conservative case appeals especially to parents because it's about preserving family, your values and culture. And it's not just your own values, but they feel it's an American tradition of liberty that we're passing down to the next society. And it's really the soul of our society. The conservative case shifts the locus of control from government to families. In essence, the conservative case is this, that parents should decide what's best for their kids and their families. And that sounds an awful lot like what you were arguing for.
Well, I think we need to focus on the fact that way back when education came out of the hearth and the fireplace and the, you know, the parents teaching their children, because we were all bred out over the frontiers and didn't have mobility. So parents were teaching their children in their homes. And then as we got a little more mobile and a little closer together, we decided, hey, let's build a one-room schoolhouse. And then we had all the kids pile in there and we had one teacher, you know, the little house on the prairie kind of thing. And then as we got more congested and more mobility, we decided, hey, I think we better put some money in the hat and build some buildings in different locations and have all of our kids educated there. And so we came out of an agrarian society and became more mobile. And the idea was to educate children in these buildings. And the whole focus here is not distinguishing between which children. It was an idea that all of our money should go to the good of the children and make sure they get a good education. And so the focus here needs to be the parent is the connection to the child, and the parent has the right, the fundamental liberty interest in educating their children. And somehow it seemed to happen that, I don't know if it was the 1970s or somewhere, we kind of jumped the trail here and tried to separate parent from child and prevent a parent from having the voice and the control over where their children go to school. And we had that case from 1923, Pierce versus Society of Sisters, where the then governor wanted to outlaw private schools and force everybody into a public school.
Right.
And that case went all the way up to the United States Supreme Court, and a unanimous decision came back down and said, no, governor, you can't force children into a particular environment. The parent has the right and the duty to educate the child. The parent has the right to choose the learning environment for the child, because all children are unique. And that became the sentinel case for parents' rights and liberty interest and fundamental rights. And we need to bring the focus back to that, because
yes,
the connection between parent and child is so important. And that's, you know, the parent is the person that loves and nurtures the child. And we've just chosen to put money in a hat to build buildings to educate the children. But that didn't say, oh yeah, and by the way, we'll let the government decide what's being taught, or to strip the parent-child relationship. No, it was just sort of a convenience. We've got so many kids now, let's make sure they all get a good education, so let's put money in the hat. But what we need to get back to now is the parent is the voice and should be the driving control here of setting where the child goes to school and to some extent what they're learning. Parents choose which environment works best for the child, and that environment can have its own focus on what is taught in that different environment. We're not telling any environment to change. We're just letting parents decide this environment works best for my child, and then everybody can have their own ability to choose which environment works for them and their child, and perhaps aligns with their values or just educates the child in the manner that they think is best for the child.
That's right. Okay, let's go and take a break. There is a big summer push coming up. Volunteers are needed. We'll talk about that next with Donna Kreisberg. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today with Donna Kreisberg. She's one of the leaders here in Oregon to get real school choice on the Oregon 2024 ballot. And Donna, you know, we're talking during the break there about a chart that they had shown during that Q&A. And I'm going to put that chart up on iSpyRadio.com. And again, today's show is 13-25, so just look for that. But just to highlight the one aspect that really leaped out at me, because it bears witness to the positive effects of the conservative case for school choice, which is letting parents have that choice. 30 out of 32 studies showed a positive effect when it came to parental satisfaction, and only one showed no visible effect. So I thought that was really pretty cool. And again, we'll just put that up on today's show page. And so you've got your own website, of course. It's called educationfreedomfororegon.com. That's educationfreedomfororegon.com. You can download petition sheets and help them get the word out. And speaking of getting the word out, with summer coming on, there's a lot of events you guys plan to have tables at. So what are some of the bigger events Education Freedom for Oregon plans to be at?
Well, that's a great question. We have events all over Oregon. Some of the bigger ones are coming up. The St. Paul Rodeo in St. Paul, Oregon. We will be there from Friday, June 30 through Tuesday, July 4. And we'll have volunteers. We all have our gorgeous neon green shirts. And they're actually not a fashion statement. They're just very visible. And so we'll be there. We would love volunteers to help us. We have the petitions. All folks need is to sign up on our website and bring a clipboard and some pens. We'll give you instructions how to get the signatures, what questions you might be asked, and the answers to those. We'll teach folks about the measures themselves. And one thing I wanted to highlight in the measures that kind of goes back to maybe that heritage study is that we are bringing our two education measures as constitutional programs. And the reason we're doing that is because we want to make sure that the benefits and protections that we put in these measures remain available to parents, and that they protect the participating parents and schools, help the teachers, and so forth, because all of the other programs across the country have been statutory, created by legislatures, and those are fine, except as being a program created by a government, it remains subject to the whims of legislators and activist legislators, and that could pose dangers. So our programs are constitutional, and they bypass the legislature and they bypass the governor, and instead bring the protections right to parents and families and schools. So one thing I want folks to do is, you know, they can go to our website, they can sign up as a volunteer, and then we've got the St. Paul event, we have the Tigered Balloon Festival, there's county fairs all over the place, there's a Sisters Quilt Show, which is a big deal. Like, people show how to make quilts and they show their quilts. There's the Robin Hood Festival in Sherwood. There are July 4th festivals all over in Astoria and Hillsboro. Almost every Saturday we have various farmers markets, and we're attending those. And then if someone says, hey, I don't want to go to a big event and I want to set my own schedule, we can always have volunteers help us by setting their own schedule to go in front of their local post office or library. And they could just set up a table on a public sidewalk next to a road. We'll give them the signs. We've got sandwich board signs. We've got laminated posters, all sorts of things to help people. We also have events down in Southern Oregon. We've got an Eagle Point 4th of July event. There's the Jackson County Fair in July. So there's just events all over the place, and we would love new volunteers to go to our website, sign up. We'll bring them into the fold. We'll tell them all of the events in their area. We'll help get them the supplies, the information they need. It's just a wonderful thing because we have moms and dads and aunts and uncles and grandparents, and we're all over Oregon. We have some volunteers that are elderly and they have to sit in a walker, but they're out there because their heart is invested in this plan to make sure parents have the voice and the ability to choose the environment. And we have young kids helping us too. So it's a fun thing. And with our Oregon weather now wonderful, It's going to be fun to be out there collecting signatures, and we will be debuting our school bus at the St. Paul Rodeo Parade on July 4, and we're excited to show off our little bus. It's very cute, and it's decorated with Let Them Learn, which means we want all children in Oregon to have the opportunity. We don't want anybody to be eliminated or ineligible just because of their income status or where they live. These programs need to work for all of our children, because all of our children deserve the right for a good education.
That's right. So going forward, fundraising is going to be a critical situation. Can you talk about your fundraising efforts, why the money is important, and what it will be used for, and especially why small donations are really the stepping stone to getting the big donors involved?
Sure, you bet. Obviously, money is necessary because we have costs such as printing our sandwich boards and our signs and our feather flags. And when I mail things across the state of Oregon, when I'm getting T-shirts and sending out T-shirts and business cards and palm cards, all of that printing costs money, and the mailing costs money, and buying the signs costs money. And so we are a nonprofit that depends on donations. We're a 501c4, which means that donations to us are not tax deductible. But that's important because that allows us the freedom to actually go out and promote these measures and let people understand the benefits of having parents have the voice and being able to choose the environment, and how these two measures will help our kids of all flavors and stripes and colors and incomes and neighborhoods have the ability to have a good education. So the money that we are collecting from moms, dads, aunts and uncles, businesses, rich folks, poor folks, everybody that can contribute, they want to contribute because it's such an important thing. Parents and grandparents love their children. They want them to have a great education. These two measures will make that happen here in Oregon. So whether it's a donation of $100 or $10,000 or $100,000, all of that money is going to be spent on the printing and the signs and the mailing and spreading the word and getting out about Oregon all over the summer and through next year. We have to get our signatures turned in by July 5, 2024. So we have a little bit over a year to do this. And it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of volunteers. It takes a lot of money. But it's a fun thing to be involved in because we know this is important. We know this is good for our kids, because these kids deserve the best education possible for their own lives and to make sure that they are getting what we all hope that they're getting, which is a great education, not just so they can take tests and you know, answer questions, but to be the full person that they can be, guided by the principles that make them a good citizen and a loving person and, you know, contributing to society well.
And I think that's such an important point, is that, I mean, how often do you get a chance to be involved in something that can have generational change and really mean something to families, where parents who are concerned about the indoctrination that's happening in their schools, they can move them into a school of their choice. But setting any ideologies aside, it's about parents and their ability to make the best choices for their child and their family, whatever that looks like. They should be the ones to decide, not the state or politicians, parents. And I really do hope people will get involved right now. Donna, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate being here, and I would love to hear from volunteers and donations and people that are able to help us, because it's a fun environment to be in, to collect signatures and share these ideas with parents and grandparents and everybody. So we're looking forward to a lot of new volunteers coming from this interview.
Well, we definitely hope so, too. Sign those petitions, volunteer, and help them out. Find out more at educationfreedomfororegon.com, educationfreedomfororegon.com. Be part of the change you want to see. Up next, the Republicans end their walkout. We'll talk with Senator Dennis Lithcomb about what happened. That's next. If you've listened to I Spy Radio before, you know that I am a conservative, but you also know that I can be very critical of the Republican Party. Sometimes it might seem I'm even more critical of the Republicans than the Democrats. And if it feels that way, it's because I expect the worst out of the Democrats. I expect more out of Republicans. In part, it's because there is so much potential there. If only they would convince themselves that winning is a good thing, that their values really do mean something and they really are worth fighting for. Just 2 weeks ago, we had talked with Senator Dennis Lithcomb, and it was uplifting. Finally, the Republicans had the win. HB 2002 and all of its horribleness was dead. And all the Republican senators had to do was coast downhill to victory. And the Republicans would have stood tall and firm to protect kids, to protect the unborn, to protect parents' rights, to protect kids from transgender madness, and even stop child trafficking enablers. What an incredible win. But then, abracadabra, the Republican senators pulled stupid out of their magic hat. And end the walkout, and now a slightly watered-down HB 2002 has been passed into law. I guess victory is just too scary for some. To talk about this mess and what happened, I'd like to welcome back Senator Dennis Lithcomb. Dennis represents Senate District 28, which is in South Central Oregon. Dennis, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning. It's man, that's quite the opening. It's actually quite frank and truthful. So I appreciate the assessment. In my newsletter, I think last week's newsletter, I quoted from Kathleen Taylor, who was the chief negotiator during, you know, we're trying to do our job and stay involved and represent our constituents. And she was quoted after the fact when Republicans went back, in your opinion, from your perspective, it was needlessly went back. And I quoted from Taylor because she's a Democrat. She was the chief negotiator for the Democrat side of the fence. And she said, Republicans, quote, could have stopped our entire progressive agenda, yep. Period. Like, what a great statement for Republicans to realize they had victory within their grasp, mm-hmm. and they didn't follow through with that.
No, absolutely not. So let's dive in here. Last we had talked, as you mentioned, Republicans had it won, but then just out of the blue, Tim Knope decides to end the walkout, and five Republicans gave the Democrats quorum. So what happened there? Why go back when you had this won?
Well, yeah, we don't know. Look, as Republicans, we believe in the individual. We believe in the idea that everybody should be making up their own mind and setting their own allegiance. This is part of the constitutional form of government. And so nobody really knows what happened. I think, in much like your opening statement, the fear of the future is what happened. You know, are Republicans afraid of leading? And for my part, I'm ready to gain power and to remove these destructive policies that are coming out of the Democrat Party. They're going through somewhere near 300 bills. You can't imagine that, quote, all of them are good. In fact, our Republican caucus often talks about them in the morning. How many no votes can we muster? Can we stop this? And the answer is no, you cannot stop anything because you gave up the hill where we had made our last stand. And so there is a future. I think that's the important part of this question is where do we go? And that's where we probably ought to steer this conversation because everybody's already disappointed in right. where we've been.
Well, we'll definitely talk about where do we go a little bit later here. But in terms of this deal going forward, prior to the capitulation, I guess I'm having trouble wrapping my mind around how this even happened. So prior to the capitulation, did Knope ever reach out to you and the other senators to discuss what would be accepted in a plea deal? Did he take a vote among all of you before he went ahead and capitulated? Was this a caucus decision or was it entirely individuals?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, see, this is the problem with big government. There are all of these opportunities on the table, and they all have mixed goals, mixed meanings, mixed opportunities. And so to ask, look at people, millions of people in the state of Oregon have been part of various odd boards and whatnot. And there's this camaraderie associated with being a board member. There's this desire to be polite and decent and respectful and show unity. And your county commissioners do it. You know, the elevator service board does it. Your local road district does it. Your homeowners association does it. And it's hard to raise a red flag because you look like you're not playing along. You're not a nice guy. You've got you know, you're getting swept along by the leaders, quote unquote. That's why we call them leaders. And I think that's a mistake. I think it's a mistake to give too much power to government. I think everybody ought to learn to run their own sphere of influence, their own lives. The free market is a perfect example of where this happens daily, and government's never involved. Nobody ever asks, how is it the government keeps Starbucks filled with coffee beans? Like, where? How does that happen?
Well, but Dennis, I don't understand why this happened. I mean, there was no need to do this when you guys had the victory. So was somebody applying pressure on Canope? I mean, was there some kind of deal that these other Republicans got?
Those are the parts that I can't answer. I don't know where the pressure came from. I don't know what the deal was, you know, what in any intricacies. I know on the face of it, Republicans are claiming, the Oregon Republican Party is claiming victory.
Yeah.
And yet this is one of, you know, Hazlett is the guy, or actually stop. It was Bastiat was the guy who said there's a difference between the scene, the public, the propaganda, and the unseen, all the other lives that have been lost in the mix, all the opportunities that have been destroyed by the state reaching in and taking control of these monies, these tax dollars, these efforts to get people to, quote, buy something. Yeah. And whether that's an electric car, you know, that all of a sudden the government wants you to buy, and therefore they'll incentivize you and they'll tease you along in this mousetrap type world.
Well,
get their agenda.
Yeah, clearly something happened here. And eventually, though, I think it will come to light if suddenly one of those Republican senators has a really sweetheart deal. We've certainly seen that in the past. And as you mentioned, ORP is out there claiming victory. It boils down to, don't trust your lying eyes. We'll talk about that next with Senator Dennis Lidscombe. And welcome back. We are talking today with Senator Dennis Lidscombe about the aftermath of the Republicans abandoning ship and ending their walkout. And Dennis, during the break there, we were talking that, yes, there was a conference call. Yes, there was a vote to end the walkout. And yes, the majority of the Republicans did agree to that. I'm still just trying to fathom why they did that, because to me, you had the victory. I just don't understand why this happened, because, you know, HB 2002, everybody was saying how horrible it was, and yet they ended it anyway. Do you think we'll ever really get a handle on why this ended? I mean, what were some of the reasons they gave during that call?
Well, part of it's, you know, how will Republicans do in the next election cycle? And see, the other thing you have to remember is this is history. History is made up of thousands and thousands of individuals. We know handfuls of them. We know about Caesar. We know about Cromwell, the nobles of Venice. You know, they took power in their own home countries. They usurped the public. They drenched these people in blood in their revolutionary mindset. Mao did it. Pol Pot did it. I'm not saying that Republicans have turned into Mao and Pol Pot, but this is history. The Anti-Federalist, a guy called the Newport Man, said, "The instances of design shipwrecks and ships run away by a combination of masters, supercargoes, and part owners is so great that nothing can equal those instances except patriots and politicians who have raised themselves and their families to power and greatness by destroying the very freedom and laws they were chosen to defend." That's in 1788. Yeah. That's a long, long time ago, and we see the same thing happening today. This is
absolutely
our failure as human beings to live up to our calling.
Well, absolutely, and it's also a massive breach of trust when and I don't think the Republican Party as a whole, and certainly not Tim Canope and these other ones that were pushing this, I don't think they understand the breach of trust here. I mean, they'd been telling us all along that HB 2002 was so horrid, because it was, that it was worth staying out of the building to kill it. It needed to be killed. It was so important to stop that, it was worth sacrificing careers over. But now, well, it wasn't that bad. So were they lying to us then that it wasn't all that bad, or are they lying to us now that it's not as bad as it looks? I mean, were there any wins negotiated on HB 2002?
There were marginal wins, but the trouble is the government enterprise. The trouble is that the government is using our tax dollars against us. The state is propagandizing all of these issues, and they're advancing these, along a graph. In my newsletter, I said it's like a screw in a mechanical fitting, always turning, always gaining, always gripping, always penetrating, forever holding fast and never letting go. That's what we face with the power of the state. And until you get a bunch of individuals who are saying, we're going to stop this, sincerely stop this, and not let this ruin everybody's lives in this culture war, we've got a tough job on our hand. We have to protect our own children, our own families. We have to work to restore our God-given rights, our rights to our lives, our liberty, our own just pursuits. These are creedal values that the left is trying to destroy. And we need Republicans who can argue, acutely for rescuing those values from the bin.
Yes, and that was the problem, is they allowed this bill to go through. It may be slightly watered down, but it's still horrible. So specifically speaking, what are they saying are the wins on HB 2002, and were they worth the price of surrender?
Well, yeah, you're asking a question I don't know the answer to, other than I don't think so. I've not gone back yet. I will continue to stay out because the transgender ideology is right there front and center. Sure, there's some parental involvement that's not, before they said, nope, parents are enemies of the state. We're moving in. We occupy the space between parents and their children. We're the authority. We're the person you go to. Every school teacher somehow got elevated above mom and dad in this equation. It's completely baffling that the Democrats would advance that, and that their party, their majority of the voters in the metro areas of Portland, Eugene, and Salem would be okay with this idea that the state should raise your children.
And the absurd part, though, is that Republicans, apparently by ending the walkout, apparently are okay with that. And we're being told not to trust what they'd been telling us, and not to trust the evidence of our own eyes. But here's a tip for the Republican leadership: if OPB calls the surrender a good deal, it wasn't. And I'd like to read this from the ORP newsletter that just came out earlier this week. Thanks to our Senate Republicans and independents, last week we achieved a victory in the Oregon State Senate. This accomplishment not only demonstrates our commitment to the principles of liberty, limited government, and fiscal responsibility, but it also highlights the strength and unity within our party. During a critical moment, our Republican senators made a bold decision to stand up for the values that define our great state. They successfully thwarted the passage of harmful legislation that would have had far-reaching consequences for Oregonians, impinging on their individual liberties and burdening them with unnecessary regulations, except, of course, they didn't stop it. It went through. But the problem is, I don't think that letter requires any real comment from me. It stands on its own. But after insulting readers' intelligence and the evidence of their own eyes, they then have the audacity to ask for money. And this is the really galling thing, too. Here it says, thank you for standing with us as we work tirelessly to uphold the conservative values that make our country and Oregon great. I mean, is capitulation now a conservative value? I don't see commitment to losing being a conservative value.
Yeah, well, you're right. And I think a majority of Republicans agree with you. And capitulation, you capitulate first, and then you compromise, you capitulate, and then you surrender. And in my newsletter, I said, quote, surrender is not an option. That was my point, is we cannot surrender. Even after, making misguided decisions or wrongheaded decisions, I don't care how you label it, Republicans should never give up the fight. We should stay all the principles that they mention in that newsletter are grand principles. We should be arguing those things. We should be fighting for those things. Now, for the Republican voter, you have to decide, well, who is it that I can trust? Who's going to follow through on those ideas? Is it the current Republican that's in office, or is it a new player, somebody we've never seen before, somebody who understands the founding principles and these creedal values that are so important to our American experiment of self-government?
And I think you're absolutely right. Surrender is not an option. But the problem is now they've sabotaged you, and now you're forced to step down after your term expires. We'll talk about what now next. And we're back on our final segment now. Senator Dennis Lidscombe, we've been talking about the surrender of the Republican senators who got nothing from the surrender except for the eternal gratitude and thanks of Oregon Public Broadcasting for their unconditional surrender. Somehow the Oregon Republican Party thinks that you shouldn't trust the evidence of your own common sense. You're just too stupid to see how brilliant this all was. And by the way, send them some money so they can elect more leaders who will surrender when the Democrats criticize them. Why on earth would I want to give money to the ORP now? I mean, who bets on a horse that is committed to losing? So, Dennis, in the time that we have left here, talk to us about the impact you think this is going to have on Republicans going forward. Is this surrender going to somehow get more Republicans elected to the Senate?
Well, yeah, I'm not any good at looking at the future. When we hold up these values and we talk about the devastation that comes from transgender ideology, we'll have trouble justifying to future Republicans that we did everything we could do to stop this dangerous ideology. And it's devastating. Again, it's the seen and the unseen. What we don't know is what this little boy or girl's life looks like in 5 years, 10 years, et cetera. We don't know. We do know that suicide after the fact is every bit as great as the threat of suicide before the fact. What we don't recognize, however, and this is a failure on the part of Republicans, is that the conversation, we already outlawed conversion therapy. Why in the world would any state outlaw talking common sense to somebody who's confused? If you're confused about 2 + 2 = 4 and you seem to think it's 5, I should be able to instruct you that 2 + 2 = 4. Here, let's put some apples on the kitchen table. Let's talk about it. Let's discover that 2 + 2 = 4. That's what the number 4 means. And since we outlawed that for transgender therapy, we're in big trouble.
Well, I just think that if they were going to surrender on HB 2002, first of all, they should never have surrendered on that. What they should have done is have a bill that everybody ought to be able to agree on, which is the Leave Kids Alone bill. These are adult issues. Leave them alone. Get this crap out of our schools until they're 18. And after they're 18, they can do what they want. We've only got a couple minutes here left with you. I'm sure a lot of people, especially ourselves, are looking at the impact this now has on you and other senators who walked out, because from where I'm sitting, they are, it looked to me like they sabotaged you guys. This is a great way to get conservatives out of office now. They got Measure 113. They just had to convince you to walk out. And now all of a sudden the moderates say, well, let's walk back in. So what now for you? I mean, and the other senators, what about your political career going forward here?
So where we stand is I will file again when the filing date opens in the middle of September, and supposedly the county clerk will deny my application. She'll say I don't qualify. And I have two, you need standing and you need to be harmed. And at that point, I will be harmed. I have standing. I'm a state senator who will be denied holding office in the future. I will get harmed as soon as I file my paperwork and they throw it back in my face. And now we can make then a plea for an injunction, a stay, and you know, make our argument. that the denial of quorum is a valid constitutional perspective that says minority voices deserve the right to speak their mind freely without getting political penalties applied to them. And so what we see is this arbitrary and capricious, whimsical assignment of excused and unexcused coming from the Senate president's office. That is the crux of a future lawsuit. You know, several of us will all be joined into that same effort and see if we can win an appropriate place on the ballot. The real danger is if we are allowed on the ballot, we win our primaries, we win the general, and then the decision comes out before the swearing-in ceremony that says, oh, here's the decision from the courts, you're not allowed in. And it's like, well, wait a minute, pal, that was, a shifty little deal. But this is, again, how tyrannies are created, step by step, inch by inch. And Republicans need to start creating tyranny based around liberty, tyranny based around individual rights, individual property rights and freedom and liberty. That's where we need to get people to understand the rules of the road.
Right. Well, we do know that should Democrats miraculously find themselves in a minority, we know for certain that Democrats will suddenly want to be able to deny quorum. Dennis, I want to thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate you being here.
You bet. It's always fun. It'll be hard for me to live up to that. Republicans ought to be tyrannical, but I'm game.
We really do appreciate Senator Lithcom coming on today. It is definitely not easy being the only clear-thinking person in the building, and we really do appreciate him standing in the fire while trying to hold people together. It's tremendously sad, though, that all of the hard work of Senator Lithcom and others who tried could be so callously thrown out by the sabotage of a few weak people. So for those who voted to condemn our kids to the worst of the far-left ideology because somehow being liked by your opponent is more important than the values you claim to have, well, all I have to say is, if you surrender your values, you never really had them to begin with. Any organization, whether government or corporations or political parties, are only as strong as the weakest links. We need stronger links. And the one good thing here is that the weak Republicans who caved are now also prevented from running. Sadly, so are the good ones. But now is the chance for stronger ones to rise. Phoenixes rise from the ashes. Now is the time for Republicans to ask yourself, will you rise or stay on the ash heap of history? Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.